Hey everyone, this is Crime and Wind Down. I'm Emily.
And I'm Madison.
And here we are with episode number 5, but online number 4. I've lost track at this point, honestly. We're always going to be one behind online forever.
So. And we're always going to keep you on your toes about when our next one is going to be released.
Yeah, it's been, we just released one, but that was recorded maybe like a few months ago.
It's always new and exciting that way.
Here we are, a new day.
New brunch episode.
Brunch! Basic ass brunch.
I think this is good for us. We're hyped up on mimosas and lots of coffee.
We didn't need either of them. Like, we're fine. But we just wanted to be on a level.
Mm-hmm.
Also, if you hear any weird noise in the background, that is my beloved dog.
Beanie Baby.
Beanie. But also, Beanie Baby. Yeah, she's pretty cute. It'll be a good time. So, I think you're first.
Yes.
Oh, we're drinking mimosas, whatever, you got that.
Okay. Yeah, it's like a middle class champagne. So, not like Veuve, but also not André.
Yeah.
So, middle of the road. It's doing well for us, I think. We're on our first bottle. So, we'll let you know when we tap into the second bottle. That's where things really escalate. But,
sick.
So, I think I told you about this a little bit earlier, but I really struggled this week to pick a story because my original plan was to do a story on a cannibal, because I don't know if you've heard about this, but are you into, like, celebrity tea at all?
I think you know I'm not.
Okay, well,
I kind of wish I was, but, like, ugh.
Yeah, it's a lot. It really takes up a lot of my life. It's a lot of my time. So, Armie Hammer.
That's my dog. Keep going.
Armie Hammer. A ton of girls have been coming out.
Okay, but wait. Who is that?
Emily, oh my god. He's this 6'5", gorgeous man from Call Me By Your Name.
Oh, I know who that is.
Yeah, like, okay. Ideal, like, such a hottie. I have, like,
major crush issues.
Major crush on this man. I'm telling you, like, seriously. So, it's come out that he has been into BDSM, which is fine.
Yeah, but more than fine, whatever.
But it's actually more than that, and, you know, a girl has come out and said that he's raped her, he's had all these cannibal fantasies, and she has posted screenshots of him saying, like, I want to break open your ribs and eat them, or, like, I want to take your toe and keep it with me forever. Like, very weird, very real, like, they're verified.
So these are texts.
They're DMs on Instagram, they're text messages, there's just this whole slew of things, and so I got into the idea of, like, oh, well, maybe I should do a story on, like, a real-life cannibal.
Mm.
But then I dived into that, and it was really mentally draining, and I did think you guys would want to hear about that. So I switched topics.
I mean, there's nothing off-limits here, but I see.
It was, like, mentally, like, draining me. So I was like, oh my goodness, okay, we're not doing that. Scratch that. And so now, in honor of Valentine's Day, I wanted to do a story of a killer couple.
Ooh.
And one right out of our own city. So this is a story of the San Francisco Witch Killers.
What?
They were a killer couple with this is a French word that I'm going to totally screw up, but folie à deux. Which translates to a madness for two, or a shared delusion, which apparently is a psychology term that we can discuss later.
I might have heard this one a long time
ago. Oh, really?
Yeah, or read about it, but I don't remember the details at all.
This was the first time I'd ever heard about them, really, and living in San Francisco, you feel. Of course, it was in the 80s.
Yeah, that's the part that doesn't ring a bell to me that it's in San Francisco. Yeah.
Okay. Okay, so I guess the couple consists of Susan Carson and Michael Bear Carson. And we will start off on this adventure.
Also, guys, if it sounds like someone's trying to claw into the room, it's because my dog is literally trying to claw into the room. So I'm hoping that isn't really picking up.
But if so, oh well. You'll be just be distracted by this crazy, awesome killer couple story that you won't even hear it.
Exactly.
So Susan Barnes, before she became Susan Carson, obviously, was a seemingly normal 1960s housewife living in Arizona. Her husband made good money so she could afford to stay at home, but she always wanted more. There's a little bit of like an underlying energy to her that she wasn't your typical
like was she housewife. Like, what's the word I'm searching for? Did she just feel like her potential wasn't like being utilized, or she just wanted, or was it more like she didn't feel fulfilled? Like, what do you think?
I think it was a lot of mental health issues.
Oh, okay.
But mixed with that too, like she always felt like she was meant for more.
Mm-hmm.
So of course the next logical thing is she starts taking a ton of LSD, and mescaline and peyote. Is that how you say it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I haven't heard of the second one.
Mescaline?
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like a type of tequila, like mezcal.
Oh, okay.
But definitely not. I don't think that is. So she is taking a ton of drugs. She starts hanging out with her son's high school classmates. So that's a bad combo.
so many boundary issues.
She regularly seduces his friends and is rumored to have slept with 150 young men.
Well, you know. Wild. Yeah, she was having a great time.
Yeah, I mean.
It sounds like it.
Right. I mean, good for her, but also, wow, her poor kids.
Yeah, I mean, crazy. Yeah, also, like, that's, I mean, yeah, depending how old they are.
High school.
Yeah. I was going to say, are they 18 or what? Right.
So, when she turned 35, she started having these delusions and hallucinations, not on drugs. So she just, and I wonder if it was because she was taking so many that now she kind of was that, like, had an altered perception, because I've heard of that happening.
Like, I mean, I think there's definitely research that shows if you are taking a lot of hallucinogens, you kind of have this, like, predisposed likelihood that your brain will kind of like revisit those hallucinations, mm-hmm. or like you're just more prone to like re-experiencing.
Right.
It's almost like that feeling where, or at least I imagine, like if that feeling you get when you like have a really like fun time doing something and then your brain just like associates like a bunch of stuff with that situation. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
And it triggers the trip again or
something? Yeah.
So, she also believed that she was a psychic, even as a child. So, I think that was also in the back of her mind. Like, she probably thought these delusions and hallucinations that very well could just be, like, a mental illness were just something that she's always had. So, needless to say, the infidelity, drugs, and budding psychosis shattered her marriage. She had visions telling her that she needed to meet her soulmate, who basically would follow her, do anything she wanted. She felt like she was basically, like, a god or, like, someone,
like, grandiosity.
Yes, on a higher level than everyone. Yeah. So she, like, got visions, like, you know, you need a follower, a soulmate.
Yeah.
But,
I mean, this sounds definitely like a psychotic disorder, 100%.
Exactly. You know? So then, of course, shortly after, she meets James Carson. James was another nonconformist, middle-class dropout, and he had a special interest in religion, which obviously you can already see this is going to be a bad combo for these two people. At the time, he had a wife and daughter. He was a stay-at-home dad slash pot dealer. awesome. Glad he got to do two things that he loved. Mm-hmm. And his daughter said, even now, like, he was always a loving and attentive father. But as time went on, he became more antisocial and more prone to angry outbursts. So his wife got sick of all that and leaves James and takes the daughter, and they move out of Arizona. Shortly after, Susan and James meet this dangerous, psychotic couple.
So they're he's kind of in a broken spot.
Mm-hmm. And she is as well, because they both just got out of marriages.
Mm-hmm. But she doesn't know it.
She thinks she's fine. Yeah, he probably thinks he's fine as well. But the first thing Susan says to James is that his name is Michael. James says, "No, my name is James."
Then Susan. So she just renamed his
ass? And she says, "No, you are Michael. You're an angel of God." From then on, James went by Michael Bear Carson. He added the bear. He added the bear as his middle name. He felt like that was cool. Spiritual. I don't know. But I just thought it was funny that his name went from James to Michael Bear. Yeah. Like, okay.
Interesting,
I guess.
We'll just note that.
Yeah, I would have picked a way more spiritual name.
I don't know, is that a crime, that name? You just chose because it's super whack.
Michael Bear.
Incarcerate him.
Based on that. This definitely was a match made in hell. James was looking for...
Did you write that down? If you wrote down this is a match made in hell...
I absolutely wrote that down. Because it was. It was. That is a terrible combo. Someone who's delusional, looking for a follower, and that was literally what my next thing was. James was looking for God, and Susan was looking for a disciple or a follower. So,
ooh, yeah.
Yeah. So you can already tell that this is going to be a bad combo for everyone involved. Mm-hmm. Susan developed a religion from her drug and psychosis-induced visions. Okay. So she was very into, like, the spiritual world and, like, coming up with her own religion. She wanted followers. And this religion was basically a twisted, radical interpretation of Islam.
So wait, how... So from when she, like, started, like, her stuff, like, and then until, like, now, like, how much time has it been?
Probably, like, a couple years. Okay. Like, 2 or 3 years. Mm-hmm. Some of the rules of her religion... Insulting a woman was basically assault, and its punishment was death. That was one of her rules.
I'm okay with that.
Can we get down for that rule, honestly? Maybe.
All right. I'm all of a sudden, like, seeing
God.
Sold
on it, okay.
Seeing God.
That's not the crazy part. That one I'm like, okay, kind of okay with. But
punishable by death.
But they also believe that witches were surrounding them, using their mental powers to control others.
Yeah, so that was casual.
And their basic main ideology of the religion was that all witches needed to be killed.
Oh, I'm a witch.
So they have this religion. Mm-hmm. They meet, you know, it's still like the honeymoon period. They take a year-long trip to Europe. So first they marry, and then they take a year-long, like, honeymoon trip.
What year is this again? I forgot.
This is, like, 1980.
Okay. Yeah. You said that.
Or maybe late 70s. Okay. And so they take a long Europe trip for a year, and during that trip, they're obviously, like, tripping all the time. Like, so many drugs, and I can only imagine.
I really just want to see them, like, walking around. Like, did they look creepy? Were they wearing, like, capes? Like, that's kind of...
Yeah.
Or, like a long trench coat. Like, I just imagine them looking so creepy.
They were basically hippies, and that's what they, like, looked like and portrayed. And during that time, obviously, it was very, like, counterculture, and that was accepted, and that was a new wave of things.
Do you think they look like Manson followers?
Totally,
like,
they did.
That's my...
Yeah, they 100% looked like Manson followers.
You saw pics.
Yeah, and had to peep what they looked like, obviously. So, they, soon after their Europe trip, they move to the Haight-Ashbury district, which, of course, is, like... popping off in the 80s, like, very free love, hippie vibes.
Still Very much so.
Yeah, still very much so. And of course, they are in that neighborhood to recruit people for their religion. And obviously... What?
What if they're still there?
Oh, they're in jail. They're definitely in jail. But I would be interested to know, like, what house they lived in. Or it'd be fun to see. Because you'll soon see. Yeah, murder definitely took place there. So, obviously, they're still taking a ton of drugs. I'm sure their psychosis is, like, getting even more terrible and realistic. So, in March 1981, or I think a few months prior, they meet Karen Barnes, who is a woman living in the Heathrow district. She's very, like, spiritual, and, everyone else who meets the Carsons, like, don't like them. They think they're really abrasive. They think they're crazy and just bad vibes. It sounds like they would
push a lot of stuff on people.
Yeah, like, very. And they're very abrasive. And they don't, like...
So if anyone said something to the girl, would they just be like, we're gonna kill you now? Or, like, you should
be
killed? That
is spot on, and you will see that play out. But, okay. Yeah, she is definitely... the active partner in it all, and it's, he's just a follower, which you'll see throughout the story, but,
it reminds me of the first story we did. Remember I did the mom and her husband, and the husband just kind of, like, did what she wanted.
Right, which is interesting, because a lot of times you don't see the woman in a position of power ordering the man around, in terms of murder and crimes and
such.
Or
maybe it happens more often than we think.
Maybe, yeah. And they're just, like, the one in the background pulling the strings.
Yeah, the guys just take the fall.
But Karen Barnes was a very, like, spiritual thinker, and she thought they were interesting, and, like, she just wanted to learn more about them. So she invites Michael Bear and Susan to come live with
her.
Sorry,
Jason. I mean,
James. whatever your name was.
Michael Bear.
I also, side note, Susan also changed her name from Susan with an S to Susan with a Z. Just, like, a side note. Yeah. She thought
Susan
she was really
Bear.
Cool and fun doing that. I don't know.
I'm gonna call her Susan Bear.
So Karen Barnes is so nice, she invites them to come live with her.
Mistake.
Huge mistake. Karen is soon found dead in their Ashbury home with 13 stab wounds to her body and her skull crushed.
Holy shit.
Susan decided that she didn't like her, she didn't like her vibe anymore, and she told Michael that she wanted to kill her. That Karen was stealing her yogi energies. And just bad vibes all around.
Okay, side note, Susan?
Whack.
You don't have yogi energy.
Yeah, I don't know what that was, but
that's
I was like,
that's all about
maybe?
Compassion, loving
right.
others for
the
where
opposite.
They're at.
But the crazy
you
thing is that she thought she was that all that, but...
Delusional.
But they stabbed her, when she was sleeping on the floor in the kitchen. Also, I was like, oh my god, this woman was sleeping on the floor in the kitchen?
They probably demanded to have her bed.
Maybe, yeah. I have no clue. But when the police come to investigate the murder, the walls are covered in religious symbols, and the name Susan is written on the wall. Like, come on. Are you serious? Like,
do you think
it was
written in blood?
I don't know if it was written in blood, but they did say it was very Manson, like, an ode to that, which is going on at the same time, pretty much. But,
yikes.
So, yeah. Overall, we find out that Susan was delusional, and she believed that Karen was... Wait, what's her name? Karen, yeah. I was, like, tripping. I was like, okay, wait, what's her name again? Susan believed that Karen was stealing her health and yogi powers, which I already mentioned. The Carsons were obviously the prime suspects because the police found out that they had moved in and were living with her.
Yeah, and also, like, if someone's stealing your energy, stop living at their house. Like,
right.
That's one way to deal
That. Right, like, move out.
They moved out anyways.
Yeah, because they were on the run. But yeah. I was, like, so sad. Like, this wonderful person invites you into their home, and then you kill her.
I'm just imagining, like, a kind soul, like, walking Hate Street and just, like, actually believing in free love. And, like...
100%.
And just being like, these people need a home, and then...
taking them in, and then that happening.
Yeah, I mean, they... She probably... knew they were mentally ill.
Yeah.
And just felt like they probably looked so haggard. Like,
yeah, just like, and I also read that there's like a thought that maybe Susan was like jealous of her because she was younger and prettier and like used that as an excuse to just be like,
yeah, power trip.
Yeah. So they, the Carsons fled to Oregon where they hid in a mountain hideout. Until spring 1982. So they were hiding out there for a really long time. Just like, I have no clue what they were doing, but can't be good after that. So after that, they moved to Alder Point, California, where they worked on a weed farm.
Alder Point must be near Humboldt.
It is exactly near okay. Humboldt. I did the same thing. I was like, where is Alder Point? Definitely in Humboldt County. The other workers at the weed farm described them as anarchists and mentioned that the Carsons predicted a nuclear apocalypse was coming. So they just have all these strange beliefs in...
Yeah. I just feel like it's like the equivalent of like 5G flat earther Area 51... like, reptile shapeshifter people.
Right.
Like, our equivalent.
But then you add in back then.
Yeah. Like, totally. Just, like, those were the conspiracy theories of that time.
Right.
You know?
And it's, like, I get you could have your own beliefs and ideas, but then the point where your delusions get... you have to kill people because of
like
whatever your beliefs are, like it's crazy how well, we can talk about this later, but I think it's so crazy how Susan affected James that much and where her beliefs became his beliefs and it kind of just
it sounds like he was just very vulnerable predisposed.
So in May 1982, while on the weed farm, Michael and Susan get into a dispute with Clark Stevens, who is a worker on the farm. Clark Stevens says something that offends Susan, and she immediately tells Michael Bear to shoot and kill Clark Stevens over a minor dispute they have.
Well, he insulted a woman, so...
Exactly, punishable
assault,
by death.
Die.
Assault. So they try to burn the body and then bury the body under chicken fertilizer. And then once again, they obviously flee and they become the number one suspects. It's just crazy to me that they don't care about the consequences because they're not hiding anything, really.
Mm-hmm.
Like, with the fact that she wrote Susan on the wall and now, like, other people are witness, they're going to get caught eventually.
Like, I wonder if she, I mean, they must have really thought that they were, like, prophets for her to, like, write her name.
Right.
And feel like, okay, I can write my name and I won't get caught.
No consequences.
And, like, but there's also this weird, like, they're not thinking, like, so irrationally that they don't run. Like, they, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They just think they're revolutionaries.
Which is a dangerous, like...
mindset.
Dangerous mindset.
Mm-hmm.
So, the police, once they go to investigate, they find a manifesto which calls for the assassination of Ronald Reagan. They're, like, all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, what does that have to do with your religion? Is he a witch, too? It's just crazy how all over the place they are. If they're...
Yeah, exactly.
Mindset.
Yeah.
So, the following January, I don't know what they were doing in that time period, probably just hiding again, the Carsons were hitchhiking near Bakersfield.
Yikes.
And they were given
Bakersfield.
I know. They were given a ride by a nice human, a nice 30-year-old named Charles Hellyer who was driving to Santa Rosa.
No.
Immediately, once they get in the car, Susan doesn't like something he says and decides that Hellyer needs to be killed. He's a witch and needs to be killed. So I think that was her excuse for everything. Like, oh, bad vibes, you're a witch, you're dead.
And it almost, I mean, it's pretty apparent that, like, bad vibes means, like, I was slightly offended by something you said.
Yeah.
And just, like, this inflexible thinking.
And it's on a power, she's definitely on a power trip. Mm-hmm. It's, like, getting to her head. And, I mean, Michael will do anything she says. So, they get into a physical altercation in the car on 101 in Sonoma.
101!
Yeah.
Shout out.
Like, really not far from us. The car stops. They get out of the car. There's a physical fight. Susan stabs Charles Hellyer, and Michael shoots the man in front of passing cyclists. So, like, everyone can see what's happening.
Can you imagine just riding your bike and
witnessing
just
that?
Seeing, like, pew, pew.
Yeah. I'd be so scared. Oh, my God.
But I wouldn't, I definitely wouldn't stop. I'd be terrified. I'd be like,
I would, like, run and then call the police. Yeah, I don't know what I would do.
No cell phones.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
That's another topic. I can't even... How did people survive without cell phones? To, like, just for safety reasons.
I mean, you just, you know, move to a house and use their phone, and there's payphones.
So, like, what if you got lost or something, or...
You use a payphone. Or you hitchhike.
Both of those sound terrible and frightening.
And you probably bring a map.
You think I could follow a map?
If you had to, you would.
I don't know about that.
Doubts.
But, so they, obviously, the police come immediately. They lead the police on a high-speed chase, and they're obviously apprehended. Because they can't get away. Like, they're, obviously, there was going to come to a point.
Yeah, I wonder what car they were in. It was probably, like, a, yeah.
Poor Charles Hellyer's car.
I know.
And it's just sad that all these people were, like, taking them out of their own, like, goodness of their heart and helping them, and this is...
Yeah, it's, like, even worse than, like, wrong place, wrong time.
Mm-hmm.
It's, like, that plus, like, you had an ounce of kindness in your heart.
Right. And it's sad because it just makes you, like, no one can do nice things anymore without having to, like, worry about,
yeah,
like...
I have thought about that the other day, like, how nice it would be if I could just, like... Like, even if someone, like, looked like they needed help with something, even just to offer them, like, hey, like, you could use my shower.
Yes.
Like.
Totally.
Like, I'm, like, if someone was trying to get a job and, like, I don't know. It's just, like,
or
you just can't trust them because you don't know.
You can't trust anyone. That's
the
sad
thing.
Yeah,
and that's what sucks. Because I feel like we are so reliant on, like, agencies and, like, tax-paid organizations to, like, fund certain things that help people, and it's just kind of, like, there's this, like, disconnect now where you don't feel like you can personally help anyone.
Yeah, it's a sad
unless
place.
You hand them a $20 bill.
Right.
And, like, it just sucks. Because I feel like, having a shower would be worth way more than $20 if I was someone who's just, like, not feeling confident or just, like, felt like I needed to, like, a basic human need of, like, cleaning myself.
Mm-hmm. It's so sad. Or even just, I, sometimes just giving someone a place to sleep when it's raining, I always think about that. I'm like, oh, this is so sad. I can't even imagine being outside when, like, that's going on. But you just never know.
Mm-hmm.
So the Carsons, as soon as they're apprehended, they call a press conference to confess, but they spend the 6-hour press conference rambling about, all of their crazy delusions, and then they end up pleading not guilty.
Classic Susan.
So, the Carsons...
Even though you wrote your effing name everywhere.
Still trying to get out of it. The Carsons claim to have been pacifists and that they were just vegetarian yoga practitioners who converted to a form of Islam.
But, like, murder.
I was like, okay, so that's the story you're sticking with? No one's buying that. So the press dubbed them the SF Witch Killers for obvious reasons.
Mm-hmm. No witches involved, though.
No witches. They were witches.
Yeah.
They were convicted of all three murders and sentenced to 75 years to life. And they still, to this day, have never showed remorse. I think Michael Bear Carson was just up for parole, and he was denied. So.
Of course.
So, they're still in jail, and will be there for a while.
I hope. I'm surprised they didn't get sent to, like, a mental institution.
Yeah, that is such a good point. I didn't even think about that. Like, how was it decided that they had capacity?
Yeah, I mean, Michael, for sure, sounds like it wasn't an organic thing. Like, he was just, like, susceptible to being controlled by someone else.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's interesting. And, like, how could they even be paroled? They killed more than one person.
I guess once you serve half of your sentence, you're up for parole. But I think he'll still be denied. Okay. Yeah. But that's what I wanted to ask you about. From a psychology point of view, the French word, folie à deux, madness for two. And then I looked up the definition of a shared delusion. It says a shared psychosis in which symptoms of a delusional belief are transmitted from one individual to the other, with the active partner being Susan and the passive partner being Michael. Mm-hmm. So have you heard of, like, other cases like that?
Yeah. I mean, so my first thought is, so there's, just the, like, the first word that comes to mind when I think of this is just boundaries. And so when people don't have enough, like, emotional boundaries, they almost become, like, the same person. So when you think of, like, I don't know if you've met, and I feel like this has even happened in my own lifetime, like, where you have, like, a best friend and it feels weird, like, if they do something and you don't.
Mm-hmm.
Or a partner, if you see, like, couples where, like, one person can't have a different opinion as the other, like, they become, it's called, like, enmeshment.
Mm.
So it's when you're basically, like, so intertwined with that person that it feels like an internal conflict when that person disagrees with you on anything.
Yeah.
And, like, there's obviously varying levels to that, but that's my interpretation of what you just shared. Mm-hmm. And it's not something I've, like, explored exclusively, so this is,
yeah,
again, my opinion. You can quote me, but, like, obviously quote that, like, I'm not an expert. And then, so it just kind of sounds like, first of all, once he was kind of, like, attached to this person, there was no room for him to disagree with her.
Right.
I think that's one part.
She didn't give him an option.
Yeah, so it was like, you either agree with me 100% or I accuse you of being a witch. Like, I think if he didn't agree with her, like, she would have accused him of, you know, the utmost, like, sin of being a witch or whatever.
Yeah. I think it's just so interesting, because I was reading another story about, I don't know if you've heard about the Slenderman murders, which was, like, these two 14-year-old girls, and one had schizophrenia, but undiagnosed, and then the other girl kind of, I mean, as, a, like, a, whatever, 11, 13-year-old, you're in that, like, weird, very emotionally susceptible time in your life, and they ended up, like, attempting to murder their friend based on the one's delusions.
Yeah, and I think part of that too is, you know, if you don't have a strong sense of identity, like, I think that's when you can, like, get attached to someone like that. Like, I'm sure we've all run into people in our life where we see, like, you know, we've all met that person that bounces from friend group to friend group, who might kind of take on the traits of others. Mm-hmm. And that's just because there's not this, like, strong, developed sense of self. And, like, I don't know, it sounds like Michael might have, you know, had that quality. And then these, like, enmeshed boundaries. And so her delusions became his own, you know. And, like, I think, again, like, we see this with, like, conspiracy theories. Like, it just takes that willingness to believe. And I also think there tends to be individuals who might be seeking a sense of purpose who aren't getting that in their own life.
And it gives them something.
Yeah, it sounds like...
gives them an identity.
Yeah, it sounds like, you know, James, a.k.a. Michael Bear, didn't really have a huge sense of identity. Like, he straight up changed his name.
Mm-hmm. Because Susan told him to.
Yeah.
Your name is Michael now.
Yeah, and so, to me, yeah, it sounds like a perfect storm mm-hmm. for him. I mean, and of course, people like her are gonna seek out people like him. Right. Who will just blindly follow whatever she says. And sometimes, you know, when people are delusional, they have this false sense of confidence and grandiosity
yeah.
that, like, is so remarkable that, like, for him, I'm sure, like, how could someone be this confident and right. be wrong?
It's like it's like the Manson story or, like, mm-hmm. any other huge cult leader. It just goes back to that, like, people, there's always going to be a person like that, and there's always going to be followers who are willing to do whatever. So,
yeah, it's just kind of...
it's a match made in hell. As I said, I stand by that statement.
Yeah, match made in hell. I wish you, like, circled it. That should have been the name bunch of your story. Like,
I know. So that is my story yeah. in honor of Valentine's Day. Killer yeah. couple.
Good job. I mean, I don't know if what they had was love, but
some twisted form of love, maybe.
Yeah, it was attachment. I don't know, but good job sticking to the times.
Thank
you. We're really dating this episode.
And yeah, I feel like it's much better than the cannibal story. So
yeah,
save that for another time.
Yeah, good job using current events and the celebrities of our time as
you know. Spell. I love my celebrity tea.
I'm sorry, your recent celebrity crush was. Crush.
That hurt me. Any man who's 6'5", come on. Please do not be a cannibal. The one thing I ask yes. of you, please do not be 6'5" and a cannibal.
Okay. I'll preach that out. Maybe I'll make a bumper sticker for that.
Thank you, I would buy
it. If you're 6'5", do not be a cannibal or else.
I think one of our friends posted the other day a meme. Mm-hmm. And I was like, boys be like, whoopsie, I'm a serial killer. And I was like, that is so hilarious. Well, in this case, it was the woman. But I feel mm-hmm. like that is classic. Like, oops, I have something to share with you. I'm a serial killer.
How is that classic?
I just thought it was funny. Because it's like, I mean, they're the main ones. It's the man. Like, you know, the men who's the... Am I going off on a tangent? Or?
I don't know if I'm following, okay. but I well, want to be
we'll
there.
We'll revisit it. It was funny in my head.
I want to be there with you, but...
Okay, well, you might need to drink more then.
Okay. All right, great Madison. Good story, Madison.
Thank you, Emily.
You're so welcome to pop off the next part of our episode.
Love it. That was so loud. Wow, that was incredible.
Y'all, Madison's face right now just ended me.
I wasn't expecting that, even though I knew it was coming.
Even though I told you exactly what I was going to do.
Classic.
All right, so I need to put my face towards the mic. All right. I hope you're still here, everyone. If you are, congrats. Congrats and thank you.
Yes, much appreciated.
Okay, so today I am doing an unsolved crime, and it's the murder of Blair Adams.
Okay.
I think it's, like, well known.
I'm, like, a true crime junkie, never heard of it.
Okay, because I looked up, like, known, like, well-known.
Literally typed it.
well-known, unknown crimes. This came up. It's just, like, I think it's just, like, really shocking that it's unsolved, just based on what's gone down.
I can't wait to hear about it.
My sources, I got my information mostly from this blog called Talk Murder With Me, and the sources on that site were Travis Dorman and Les Hewitt. So, shout out to those
mad props
humans. Okay, so this is about Blair Adams and his murder. He was born and raised in Surrey, British Columbia, Canada.
Okay.
And he was 39 when he died. And this took place in 1996.
1996, okay.
Good year for murder.
Crime.
Unfortunately.
In Canada. I never thought bad things happened in Canada.
I think that's like a very common American insight. Mm-hmm. So.
They just seem so pure.
They are.
Like.
With their little accents.
And maple syrup and maple leaves and mousses.
Yeah, and like healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay, so Blair worked as a construction worker in his hometown of Surrey, British Columbia. His friends, coworkers, and family members thought of him as cheerful, friendly, and full of optimism.
Oh, he sounds like a great human.
Yeah. So, however, in the weeks leading up to his murder, it was reported that his usual demeanor changed drastically.
Okay, something's going on.
Yeah, so sources say that he seemed really stressed and started, like, coming off as really paranoid. And it was reported that he had more mood swings and, like, his sleep was starting to be affected. So, like, he had trouble falling asleep, trouble staying asleep, mm-hmm. stuff like that. So, you know, noticeable changes in behavior.
Yeah.
So, of course, his mom became really concerned about what might be going on with him, and it's reported that when she asked him what was going on, he didn't deny that something was wrong, but he told her he couldn't talk about it.
Oh, weird.
Yeah.
Okay.
So she was like, what?
So that makes me think either something is going on mentally, like delusions, mm-hmm. or something actually is going on.
Exactly. And that, like, theme will
play out.
Interesting.
Okay.
Okay. So I'm going to kind of just go through the timeline. So July 5th, 1996. So this is basically he had, like, quit his job. And I'll go into more details about that later.
Okay.
But on July 5th, apparently he went to his bank, and he's still in Canada right now, and withdrew all of his money. Which is just, like, red flag.
So he quit his job, withdraws all of his money.
Yeah. Okay. He also took everything out of his safety deposit box, and put it all in his fanny pack.
Okay, first, he's wearing a fanny pack? I love exactly. that so much for
I
him.
I love the 90s.
Wow, take me back, please.
Okay, so 2 days later, he made his first failed attempt to enter the U.S. He tried to take a ferry from Victoria, British Columbia, to Seattle, but he was denied entry when border control officials became suspicious that he was involved with drugs. Hence, literally so much cash in his fanny pack.
Oh, that, I was like, wait, why? But that makes 100%
sense. Yeah, like,
sense.
You're trying to, like, if I went to Mexico and I had
that much
thousands
cash,
of
yeah.
dollars in my pockets,
you look like a smuggler.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, 2 days later, oh no, I just said that. Sorry. So, he also lied to the Border Patrol, and when he told them he had no, previous criminal convictions, they were like, we just looked you up and you do. So you're lying. He had charges for, like, drug possession and assault.
Oh, okay.
And when he was told he wasn't allowed to cross the border, he decided to just go back to his hometown and, like, see his mom and some of his friends.
But no one knows why he was trying to get to the U.S.
No one knows why he was trying to get to the U.S. And we'll talk more about, like, in the past, like, the years leading up to this, like, he was doing okay. Like, he had been sober and, like, was, had turned his life around.
It sounds like he's running away from something.
Yeah. So, this is 3 days later. Now we're at July 8th, same year. He left his mother's house in Surrey for the last time. From here, he went to purchase a plane ticket to Germany. Supposedly to visit an old girlfriend he had met while working in Germany late the previous year. He used cash to pay for a round-trip flight to Frankfurt. However, later the same day, he had the ticket refunded. Which I didn't even know you could do.
So, round-trip. So, he was coming back. That's what that's telling me.
Yeah, I didn't even think about that.
But then he asked for a refund.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa. Yeah. Super weird. Yeah. All over the place.
Yeah, and I wish I knew more about this, like, old friend.
Mm-hmm.
The next day, so July 9th, he attempted to cross the border to the U.S. again. So
through
this
the
is,
same thing?
So this time, I'm not, it's not the same way.
Oh,
so
okay.
So he didn't, like, try to do it by ferry. So essentially, this is his third time trying to get out of the country.
Right.
Right. So, it's also, like, why are you, like, what is it that makes it so he can't come into the U.S.? Like, why don't you just do it legally?
Maybe he doesn't, well, if he didn't have a passport. Yeah, I don't know what's going on.
Because it's, like, why would you buy a ticket to Germany?
And then refund it.
Yeah. Like,
maybe the girl told him not to come or something. I don't know.
I don't know. I just, like, don't get, yeah. We'll talk more about it. So he tried to get into the U.S. again, but failed. It was really early in the morning, it was still dark, and he was on foot. So authorities stopped him when they thought they recognized him as a suspect who had stolen a car earlier that night, but there wasn't enough evidence to, like, connect him to that.
Okay.
So he was released, but not allowed into the country.
Wow. Okay.
Right? So, and literally the same day, he tries again. So, got caught early July 9th, tries again later in July 9th.
What does he want in the U.S.?
I know,
or what is
exactly.
he running from?
So, but this time he made it. He abandoned his car at the airport in Vancouver and rented a Nissan, which he drove across the border to Seattle, and from there, he bought a one-way ticket to D.C.
What? I'm shook right now. Like,
yeah. Okay. So, like, I'm just thinking of a map right now. In Surrey, British Columbia, tries to go to Seattle on a ferry, fails, goes back to Surrey, tries to make it to Seattle again on foot, doesn't. No, tries to go to Germany.
Tries to go to Germany.
Decides
first.
Not to.
Yeah.
Goes back to the airport again. I wonder if he was going to try to fly again and then was like, frigate, I'm going
to... Or he wanted to put people off his trail.
Yeah, it's just so weird. And then rents a car, so didn't even try to drive his own car.
Mm-hmm.
So, he makes it, though, and then goes to D.C.
So he's in Washington, D.C. Okay.
So now it's July 10th. This is all in a 5-day period. Like, can you imagine? Last time I saw you was on Sunday. Can you imagine that time, me trying to leave the country 4 times?
No, I'd be like, what is wrong with you? Do you need my help? What is going on?
Madison, on the case. Helping out me. So, on arrival in D.C., he rents another car, and this time it's a Toyota Camry.
Nice.
And he began to drive to Knoxville, Tennessee. So...
why didn't he just fly there in the, to begin with?
This is what I'm saying. Doesn't check out.
I want to know.
Because I wonder if he just didn't have a passport.
Maybe.
That's my thought, because maybe he was like, you know, bought a ticket to Germany for some reason. But no, he must have had a passport.
To get
because,
through.
Well, that, and it says he used to work in Germany. So he must have a passport.
Yeah.
Maybe he lost his passport.
But how did he get through the border? eventually.
He snuck in.
Oh, he snuck in.
Uh-huh.
Oh, okay.
So the fourth time was still, it was illegal.
Okay.
But,
Because he said, I thought you said he rented a car.
So he rented a car, parked it at the airport.
Oh, that was the rental he parked there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And so I think, yeah, it just sounds like he got lucky that time. But yeah, I think my thought is he wanted to get out of the country, maybe misplaced his passport.
That doesn't, but also that doesn't explain the Washington, D.C. and then driving to
Tennessee.
Yeah, what was that about?
Why didn't you just, yeah, he's like obviously trying to like get someone off his tracks.
Mm-hmm.
So, or that's what it seems like. So he begins the drive to Knoxville, Tennessee at about 6:45 a.m. And the drive took about 7 hours. I wonder if that's actually like a reasonable amount of time, or I wonder like what if it usually takes like 9 hours and he just like sped like crazy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if someone's on his tail or...
Yeah, I didn't look that up. So... Based on, like, what I read, it sounds like his first encounter in Knoxville with someone else was really strange. So, basically, it occurred around 5:30 p.m. in a gas station. So, it's been almost 12 hours since he left D.C. He claimed that his keys to his rented Camry were not working.
So yeah, were they like the, I'm assuming the electronic kind, or?
Probably not, because it was the 90s.
Yeah, so they wouldn't have those then.
So, the reason for this, we'll get into, but basically he somehow gets like help from like a tow truck situation. And the person who comes to support him, his name is Gerald Sapp, and he's a repair service driver. So when he got there, Sapp immediately was like, hey, like, those aren't the right keys to this car. And apparently he was using the keys from his Nissan that he rented
right.
in Canada to try to drive this Camry now.
I wonder what happened to the keys. Like, where are they?
Yeah, and obviously that's not gonna work. And Sapp was like, hey, you should check your pockets for the correct keys.
Hello, yeah.
And Blair refused to do so.
What? Oh
yeah.
My goodness, I'm so... Like, I have no clue what's going to happen.
Yeah, so Sapp is like, something's not okay with this guy, but I'm gonna, like, try to help him out. So, when he kind of refused to, like, look around for the keys, like, whether they're in his pocket or not, Sapp towed the Camry to an auto shop and gave Blair a ride to the nearby hotel.
Okay, was he staying there, I wonder, or he was just going to get a room?
I think he was just like, hey, like, you're going to need a place to stay. Your car... Is getting towed, and Blake was just like, here, I'm dropping you off here. So, in an interview, Sapp explained how strangely Blair had been acting, and it seemed like something was off. And the next day, actually, we'll get into that later. But around 7 p.m. that same day, so this is literally the same day, he landed in Washington, D.C. So...
He drove a lot in one day.
Yeah, he drove to Tennessee, lost his keys, got towed to this inn, now he's checking in. And he bought a room for one night, and however, the investigation later showed that he likely never entered the room.
What? This is, like, my ideal story.
I know.
I really
There's
am
so many
confused.
Questions. So, surveillance cameras at the hotel recorded Blair entering the lobby of the hotel and then leaving around 5 times within 40 minutes.
But also never entering the room, actually?
So, I think he was just, like, loitering around the lobby. got a room, but, like, had never went in. It sounds like he didn't really have any shit with him.
Right.
Like, it doesn't seem like he was...
What was his plan? Like, what is his plan? I have no idea.
We'll talk more. Hotel staff report that he seemed really agitated and paranoid, and they described him as acting as if someone was after him.
Okay, that's the one thing I've been thinking this whole time. Maybe mm-hmm. drugs? I have no clue.
Mm-hmm. All right, so now we're on July 11th. So, workers discover Blair on a construction site near the hotel at around 7 a.m. At first, they thought he was, like, a sleeping squatter, but as they approached, they realized it was a dead body.
The shock. That was actual shock.
Mm-hmm. So... Now, so it's been 12 hours since he checked into the hotel and was, like,
loitering. But did not stay there.
Yeah.
And then they find his body at a construction site close to the hotel.
Mm-hmm. At 7 a.m.
Did it say how he was killed?
So we'll get into that.
Okay.
So, his pants had been removed, but, the sheriff reports that it looked like someone else had pulled them down for him, which I don't know what that means.
Yeah,
don't know what that means. And his socks lay on the asphalt. A set of keys to a Toyota Camry and a card to a hotel room were strewn about. His shoes were off. And as he lay dying, it looked like he pulled one of them close and used it like a pillow.
So, oh my god, that's so much to unpack.
His pants are halfway down. His shoes are off.
He had the keys.
He had the keys to the whole time. Mm-hmm.
So why didn't he want...
That's one thing that's just like weird. But, like, maybe he didn't? I don't... There's no confirmation. Like,
that is unless so there was some, weird. Like,
sticky stuff. Like, weird involvement of a criminal.
Right, in the car.
Yeah, so then... Detectives found a black duffel bag nearby that contained maps and various travel receipts. And this is where it gets crazy.
That it's already so crazy.
So they find his fanny pack, like, right next to him, and it's stuffed with nearly 5 ounces of gold bars, gold and platinum coins, jewelry, and nearly $4,000 in cash of Canadian, U.S., and German currency.
What?
And it was determined that the car keys to the Camry that he had reported, like, being gone to that repair worker guy, mm-hmm. Sap, were indeed the keys to that Camry.
Okay, so my first question, can I ask questions yet?
Yeah, okay. We're still going, but...
Okay, well, my one question is, did they determine how much of the money he still had from when he pulled it out in the very beginning? Like, was there any money missing? Did they mention that?
I don't know. I mean, okay. It's hard to tell because he rented cars.
That's true.
Like, who knows? He might have bought, like, 5 plane tickets.
He was paying for cash with everything. Yeah, exactly. Okay.
But still, but the fact that it was Canadian, U.S., and German currency, it sounds like he was a part of all of that because, you know, his flights... Like, he was trying to go to Germany.
Bars. Like, where did that come from?
It might have been his, like, safety deposit box.
Oh, okay.
Because he emptied that, too.
So, whoever killed him did not do it for robbery, obviously.
Yeah, and that's what's so weird. So, there were a number of cuts and scratches on Blair's body. One in particular on his forehead was determined as having been caused by a club or a crowbar. It appeared that Blair did attempt to defend himself against his attacker after the autopsy. The medical examiner in Tennessee listed Blair's ultimate cause of death as a severe blow to his stomach, rupturing his abdomen and causing septic shock.
Interesting.
And, like I said before, when they found his body, he was naked from the waist down. And they say it's likely he was sexually assaulted.
Really?
In accordance to his injuries, but, like, they couldn't, like, prove that it had happened.
Right.
Like, right when he was murdered.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no DNA evidence at the crime scene. Except, there was, like, a single strand of hair in his hand. That's the only, like, evidence they found at the crime scene that someone else had been there, but they couldn't identify whose hair it was.
Could they obtain any evidence from it? Like, if it was, like, you know, a certain race? Like, because I feel like they can do that now with technology.
Well, I think there was no, like, forensic DNA. Like, they, like, it, from his injuries sustained, it looked like he had been sexually assaulted, but there was no DNA evidence that came of that. So,
yeah.
Maybe he was assaulted, like, 5 days ago?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
That is so weird.
Yeah, super weird. No murder weapon was found, and no signs of drugs or alcohol were found in his system. And like I said before, the only foreign DNA that was found at the scene was a long strand of hair in his hand, which did not end in any new leads.
What was he doing in Tennessee?
Mm-hmm. So,
like, what was he doing
also
there?
With the autopsy, it showed that he definitely had eaten at some point, but there's no, like, witnesses of him, like, being at any restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
There was reported sightings of him talking to some people, one at a truck stop and another at a nearby Cracker Barrel, but, like, none of these leads led to anything to help the investigation. So, crazy.
So crazy.
So, side information, he had issues with abusing alcohol in the past, but appeared to be doing, like, so much better. Again, nothing in his system.
Right, he was sober when he died.
Yeah. He had been attending AA meetings for, like, over 2 years. And, you know, the only thing is, like, that those behaviors that, like, showed up right before, and that he, like, quit his job, like, really suddenly, you know. And, of course, there's so many questions, like, why Tennessee?
Right. And if someone was after him, say that was the case, they must have fought, like, how did they know he was going to be there? Or maybe he was meeting someone? Like, I have no clue.
Yeah.
But it wasn't motivated by money.
Yeah, and that's why.
Which means it's personal.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's, like, the two, like, the two...
theories?
Like, yeah, top theories are, one, obviously there's room that for the idea that he was, like, mentally ill. And, like, maybe, you know, maybe someone was just walking by and he was, like, pacing around, like, acting really, sporadically, and, like, he just, like, ran into the wrong person and, like, they got in an altercation.
That's actually I think that is very possible, because his injuries don't seem so much like someone was intent on murdering him, but maybe just happened to do, like, a really powerful hit to the stomach, and then it ended up killing him.
Yeah, or, like, I don't know, there's also a theory that, like, he had hired, like, a sex worker,
mm-hmm.
and then it, like, went bad.
I can see that.
But I mean,
why?
That would explain why his pants are down, but, and it's also, like, I imagine if someone, like, if I was a sex worker, and, like, this ended badly, like, the whole idea of, like, I mean, I feel like whoever murdered him was not a woman, just based on the injuries he sustained.
Mm-hmm.
And so, unless it was like a male
sex worker. I was going to say a male sex worker.
But, and so then it just went awry, but then yeah, I feel like they would have taken the money.
They
would have taken the money.
They would have taken the money, and that doesn't explain why he went all the way there.
Yeah, why would you cross the border to get laid? In a really sketchy
in Tennessee.
Way. Yeah. And I feel like there's not, like, I'm not an expert. I just, like, don't know why you would, like, loiter around your, mm-hmm. like, why wouldn't you go into your hotel room if you were...
That's what I was thinking, too. Why would you be at a construction site?
So that's why I feel like it was, like, a thing gone wrong. Like, I think he was just, like, pacing. Like, my idea is, like, he was pacing somewhere back and forth, being, like, just not a predictable human being, and then he, like, ran into someone, and they got in, like, a tiff, and then it just, like, someone who's, like, paranoid can be really scary.
Yeah. So do you think he was just mentally ill, then?
So, you know, some of the things that just, like, I mean, you can't diagnose someone just from, like, hearing, like, about, mm-hmm. like, what happened, but I feel like some of the things that popped up for me is, like, possibly him just having a manic episode, which is part of the criteria for bipolar 1 disorder, mm. but at the same time, like, usually with that, it's more of, like, a, I don't want to say a positive experience, but usually they're very, like, talkative and have pressured language, and maybe they, like, have more feelings of, like, exuberant confidence. So they'll say, like, oh, I have this really great idea. I'm going to, like, invest all my money
mm-hmm.
in this. Like, not so much I'm gonna take out all my money and, like, flee the country.
Yeah.
And, like, be really secretive about it. I feel right. like normally there is this, like, level of confidence where he would be like, yeah, I have this really great idea. I'm going to Tennessee for this.
Right.
Like, it just...
It could explain some of the rash decisions. I see where you're, like, that kind of behavior, but yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And then the other things I was thinking is, like, possibly just a brief psychotic episode. But I don't know. Usually when that happens, there's more, like, negative symptoms, which means, like, less emotion, less affect, meaning, like, less expressed emotion, mm-hmm. and more of, like, a decrease in mood and energy, which that just didn't really seem to fit with the story.
Mm-hmm.
So, what... I don't know. And then there's also schizotypal personality disorder, which can emerge in, like, adulthood and adolescence. And so some of the symptoms of that include, like, an incorrect interpretation of events. So a feeling that something is actually, like... someone meant something that they didn't actually mean.
Hmm. I can see that,
so
maybe.
Belief in special powers, which reminds me of your story.
Yeah, oh my goodness. Maybe she had part of that.
Mm-hmm.
That would make sense.
And like, just one of the things that can happen with that is just... wait, let me look. What was I writing? Yeah, and there's also, like, different subtypes, and one subtype is the persecutory. I always have such a hard time with that word. How do you say it? Like,
I don't know.
Like, when you persecute someone.
Persecute.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got it.
Persecutory type. So,
okay.
Which means, like, you're kind of paranoid and you think someone's after you.
everyone's out to get you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so that really goes in line with the story. But again, I don't know this person, never met him, was never, like, assessed by anyone for any of these things.
Yeah.
And, like, maybe someone was totally after them.
Can you... I feel like that's such a tough crime, because I don't think that will ever get solved, ever. Mm-hmm. That's kind of a lost one.
The investigators basically said, like, the only way we're going to solve this is if someone confesses.
Mm-hmm. Because I don't think there was intent to kill him. But I could be totally wrong. I don't see the motive.
And I also feel like if someone was following you, the idea that they were able to follow that same track within those five days, and he was in, like, he checked into the hotel, and, I mean, he obviously wasn't murdered at 7 a.m. That's when his body was found. So that just means within 6 hours of getting to this place, without even checking into his room, he was found? And, like, so that just doesn't line up.
And it was very random. Like, the tow driver happened to bring him to this hotel. Then he happened to be murdered a few minutes from this hotel. So it seems like wrong time, wrong place. Totally. Like, what you're saying.
And, like, if you were being chased by someone, why would you, like, leave stop on the side of the road and be like, I'm using the wrong keys?
And what was in the car? Why did he pretend that he didn't have the keys?
I mean, that's the argument that he was, like, having a psychotic break to me.
Okay. Wow, I'm, like, I haven't had a story that I'm actually, like, what happened? Like, what happened mm-hmm. to this person?
I think that's why, like, there's so many posts about it. It's just because usually there's not, like, that many interactions with the public that happened before something like that.
Yeah.
And he was alone in all these interactions, and a lot of people saw similar, you know, behavior.
Did his mom ever say he had, like, mental health issues, like, or no?
But that's what I'm saying. I think it could have just been, like, triggered.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it didn't have to be something he had. Like, things can... That's kind of why I brought up, like, just, like, an episode. Like, it could have just, like, popped out of nowhere.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I'm gonna have to be thinking about this.
Mm-hmm.
And just let it sit. That was a really good one.
Yeah. I love unanswered ones. I feel so bad because... Poor him. Either way.
It definitely feels wrong place, wrong time.
But it's just so odd that, like, all this happened, and then he just so happens to get murdered. Like,
if someone was really after him? Maybe?
Yeah, I mean, it's just kind of like, who has a psychotic break, and then 5 days later, after traveling cross-country, randomly ends up in a random town, is there for 5 hours, and then gets murdered with all this cash on them. Like, it's just...
And why are his pants down? I'm stuck on that. There's no need for his pants to be down.
Mm-hmm.
Unless something was going on.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. It's literally, like, such a mystery.
That's so sad, though, because I feel like with a lot of the unsolved ones, I'm always like, this will be solved. Like, one day, the evidence will be processed, genealogy, all that stuff, we'll find a killer. That one, I don't think there's any hope, really. Maybe. Mm-hmm. I hope there is, but that's a tough one.
Yeah, it's like, yeah, whoever interacted with them... Like, how is there no DNA and no murder weapon? And that's what was also weird, because if there was this, like, altercation that happened, like, why, like, who is just carrying a crowbar around?
And why didn't they take the money?
Yeah. But, like, it also could have just been an accident. And, like, if you've accidentally killed someone, even if it's out of self-defense, like, you
kind of just want to get out of the situation.
Yeah, you might not want to take anything that could, like, if you were found with, like, all this gold.
Right. Would be linked. Okay.
Yeah. So my theory, after even just talking it out with you, is that it could have been, like, whether it was, like, with a sex worker or not, with someone who they were just, like, consensually having a time together, or just, like, I don't know why his pants were down, but maybe just some weird stuff happened. Not even weird, but maybe he got in a situation that he couldn't get out of. It turned
bad.
And then that person, you know, whether it was self-defense or aggression, it happened. They fled the scene.
Didn't want the money. Didn't want to be linked to it.
Because, yeah, they didn't want to be linked to it. And it sounds like their initial involvement with him may have not been financially motivated. I don't know.
And I think they always, I remember reading, like, the more violent it is, the more personal it can be. And so, because it wasn't super violent, I feel like it definitely was a random person. Or not, like, a crime of passion or any of that. I think it was just,
if someone was following him, there would have been a gun or a knife involved.
Much more execution style. Just like, okay.
For whatever reason. He obviously had time to die because he, like, pulled his shoe as a pillow.
So he knew he was gonna, because that's another thing. Like, if you had a really bad injury to your stomach, you're in a ton of pain. Like, I feel like I would be like, I need to get to the hospital. Because I can't imagine that being that quick of a death. Or maybe it is. I don't know.
And it's crazy that, like, it was, like, a blow to the stomach. Like, it doesn't even sound like, like, it sounds like it was kind of internal bleeding.
Right. Exactly. That's what I got from that, too.
Crazy, right?
Crazy. Oh, my gosh. Wow.
So, if anyone, jeez, I was only, what, 4 years old?
Yep. We were babies.
Yeah. When that happened. But, gosh, any crime before the 2000s is just, like, so hard to track now because, you know, who even knows? His mom is probably not even alive anymore.
Yeah. Oh, my God, that's so sad.
Or maybe. No, she might be.
Because he was, like, 40.
She's thriving.
He was 40 at the time, right?
30.
Oh, I thought you said 39.
31.
Wow, that is a huge difference.
So, yeah, that is the unsolved murder of Blair Adams.
Thank you for sharing. That was a really intense one, and I like because it has so many unanswered questions, and that always, like, makes it interesting in a way, I guess.
I think, yeah, it's just, the idea of, like, crime solving is just, it's always exciting, but it always has its, like, it's really unfortunate that there's still so many, like, unsolved things. Still is possible to get away with stuff like that, but, you know, I don't know if I'm just, like, blind to it, but I feel like things like this don't happen as often, but I also, again,
maybe they are.
We just don't know about it. Life, perhaps. But, yeah, I hope his last moments were peaceful in whatever way, but
yeah.
At least he had his fanny pack. I hope he felt fashionable.
Are fanny packs in again?
They were, but I think they're out again. Back now.
My mom got me a fanny pack for Christmas. God love her. It was like Kate Spade, but I was like, absolutely not. Absolutely not. I don't know where I would wear this. I mean, it was a thoughtful gift, but
Did you just throw it away?
No. It's sitting in my closet. Do you want it?
Sure.
Okay.
Or I'll sell it to you for money.
You'll sell it to me for money?
No, I'll sell it and give you the money.
Okay, I'll sell it to you.
No. I'll either wear it, okay, or if I don't like it, I'll sell it.
You'll sell it for me.
Yeah.
Okay,
I'll put it on my Poshmark.
Oh, you have one of those?
Yeah, I haven't used it in like 2 years, but like whatever.
All right, everyone check out Emily's Poshmark. Go hit her up.
go buy all my non-existent clothes. Soon, Madison and I will be putting our Venmo online. JK. Everyone, what's the word? Everyone haggle Madison to make a social media because she won't do it for me.
Okay, I will. I will.
Promise.
Promise.
All right, everyone. Every time I close out of this podcast, I don't remember how we end it.
Oh my gosh. This is why I wrote it down the very first time.
Yeah, it's something about locking your doors.
Right. Lock your doors.
Just lock them.
Stay safe, obviously.
But I feel like that's a... That's a steal from...
No, I thought theirs is don't get murdered or something.
Theirs is stay safe. No, stay sexy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we're, I mean...
We are very clearly not... We are trying to be very different than them. So...
So I'm just gonna say lock your doors, and it's gonna be just that.
Lock your doors.
Yeah, lock your doors and crime and wind down with us next time.
Whatever that is.
We'll never know.
Bye!